Broadcasting live from the Capital OTB studios, this is Racing Across America with Seth Merrow.
Good morning. Welcome to the first Racing Across America of 2021. Happy New Year. Happy to have you on board. And some great racing across the country today. We'll touch on some New York racing a little bit later. We'll have Dave Grenig on. We'll recap yesterday's Jerome and hit on some of the action coming up. And also, as I mentioned earlier on the handicapping show, Dave had a nice interview with Dave O'Rourke from NYRA, and we'll touch on some of the potential changes coming up for New York racing. That's a little bit later on with Dave Grenig, but a nice stakes day coming up down at Gulfstream Park. So I reached out to Acacia Courtney to get some of her thoughts on the Saturday card. Acacia, good morning.
Good morning, Seth. Happy New Year. Thanks for having me on.
Happy New Year to you as well. And before we get into the specifics of today, just give us a little update. What's your weather going to look like for a Saturday afternoon?
It's very warm. It's supposed to be in the low 80s. There's some very light scattered showers expected earlier in the day, but should not affect anything even a little bit. Looks like another beautiful day in South Florida, as Ron Nicoletti would say.
Yes, and we live vicariously watching you guys down there. Certainly, as I drove in this morning in the freezing rain, I thought, yeah, we'll watch a little Tampa, we'll watch a little Gulfstream, and I will just live through you folks down there in the very nice weather. We should also mention today, Rainbow Six, a $1.1 million guarantee, correct?
Yeah, exactly. And we had a mandatory payout just a couple weeks ago, so the pool has grown really, really quickly. So $1.1 million is the guarantee. It starts in race six today, and five stakes on the program. So that sixth race that kicks off the sequence two is also a mile and a half on the allowance. On the turf, rather, starter allowance. You've got some really, really good races in the sequence today.
Yeah, we were looking at this in the handicapping program earlier, and it is a nice card. Certainly the stakes action, newly turned three-year-olds, that's always a lot of fun. And I want to tip my cap to you. When I got in touch with you to jump on this morning, yesterday, when I texted, I said, nice call in race number six. So I'll just alert people. You can always go to the Gulfstream website, find Acacia's picks every day, as well as Jason and Ron. But yesterday, nice cold exacta you've had on top in race number six. I want to say for a couple of bucks, you wound up with $140 with the exacta. So good call.
Yeah, thank you very much. Actually, the John Kimmel horse that finished second, I think it'd been about 20-1 on the morning line that I'd had some interest in. He was bet down, so I was hoping for a bigger price, but I'll take it. And I read Ortiz, I think that's the biggest price of the 5-1 you got on him all day with a 5-point day yesterday.
Yeah, Lioness of Brittany on top at 5-1, so a good call there. But as I say, the cold exact as well. We'll see what you have for us today in some of the races, including some stakes action and beyond. And let's jump in. As I say, newly turned three-year-olds, I mentioned it earlier. I mention it all the time, in fact. I love the subdivision of three-year-olds on the turf because I think there's great stakes action across the country in that subdivision. It's always a lot of fun, and things in South Florida kick off every year with the Dania Beach. That's race number four this afternoon. Fun field in here, like a salt shaker. Getting back to the turf could be interesting for Larry Ravelli. It's a gamble for Kelly Breen coming off an optional claiming win up at Aqueduct on the turf. And we're going to take a look here going back to a maiden special weight event on December 5th. The number eight horse in here will be Fighting Force for Todd Pletcher. Paid a decent amount of money for this horse, Michael Tabor, Magnier, and Beyond. You can see their silk colors right there getting it done in this race at Gulfstream. Again, back in the beginning of December. What are your thoughts on the Dania Beach?
Well, unfortunate that there is a scratch, like a salt shaker is out, so we won't get to see him on the turf today. But Fighting Force, I agree. I thought the maiden win was very strong. And I think that it was the big performance from this horse, and he had run very well in his turf debut at Belmont. So that's why I'm kind of upgrading him a bit, because I do think that he met a couple of over-bet horses coming down from New York for some bigger barns in that race the first weekend of the championship meet. So I think that he was kind of a standout in that spot, but maybe had met some others that had kind of had their own fair share of questions or too many chances. So I'm wondering about the quality of that race overall, but I do think that he's talented, and Todd Fletcher, just as always, has continued on with such a strong meet here at Gulfstream. And I like that This horse showed some tactical ability last time as well. The horse that will likely be on the lead, I would guess once again, is the 3 Kentucky Pharaoh, who I had really liked getting to the turf last time. Has turf pedigree, got that down from a big price after not running a step in the first 2 dirt races. But you can understand trying the dirt, but obviously this one's found a home on the grass. And don't leave Julian Leperoux alone on the front end, because he'll just nurse it along, a really, really good judge of pace, and that's exactly what he did with this guy last time too. As far as it's a gamble, I didn't really know what to do with him, because his 2 best races have been sprinting, but I've always thought that he looks like the type that should want to go long, and he's by English Channel. So I think that this will be a good litmus test for him to see if he's able to do the distance, if he is maybe just more of a closing sprinter. But the 1 and 2 are perhaps the ones I'm most interested in.
Yeah, you mentioned Todd Pletcher at Gulfstream, and he's already off to a very good start, 31%, and annually down there does very, very well. And I'll also mention, boy, this it's just a bang-up jockey colony this year. You mentioned Julian Leperoux on the 2-horse, but Luis Saez is on the 1, the Pletcher horse. You have the Ortiz brothers. You have Paco Lopez. It is really just a great jockey's room down there this winter.
It is, and we have Junior Alvarado down here for the first time in many years. He decided to take his pack down here to Florida, and that really seems to be picking up. As the other day on New Year's Eve, he had a 3-win day, a couple of them for Bill Mott, who he came down to ride first call for. So it's been really, really fun, because there's just so much quality from start to finish as far as the jockey colony, and seeing everybody kind of duke it out here. But as always, the Ryder Ortiz and Luis Saez seem to really be kind of rising to the top.
Yeah, it's going to be fun to watch throughout the season. All right, let's move on a little bit, and we're going to take a look at some stakes as we move along, but we wanted to pull up a maiden special event, race number 8 this afternoon, 1/16 on the grass. Nice full field, and we talked a little bit about this one on the handicapping show earlier. The notable in here may be Prayer Book, the half to run happy. Going to be fun to see what this one does in the career debut, going long on the turf of all things. But what are your thoughts in the 8th race maiden special event?
Yeah, I think it's really interesting, and I think this is a good race because it kicks off the late pick 4, and it's a good spot to see how the board is playing. I think if Prayer Book is bet or not will kind of be a good indication. Is the half to run happy, as you mentioned, but there was another sibling named Any Questions, who was a very good turf runner, in fact, a 6-time turf winner. And the dam actually did try turf a couple of times. She's tried Broken Vow. So there is some turf pedigree in there, though the star of the family is Run Happy. I think it'll be a big question as to what Prayer Book does do first time out. I was most intrigued, though, speaking of Bill Mott and Junior Alvarado, Bill has a couple in here, Crew Dragon, who mentally has really just not put things together yet, but he is making his 3rd career start, and he's been closing kind of into those slow paces up in New York and running those 2 races. I think there's a lot of room for improvement. And then the Judmont Homebred 4 for him, who's actually my top pick. There's some sneaky turf pedigree in this one, as the dam is a sister to multiple graded stakes winner Rob Roy, who came over here, ran in the Breeders' Cup Mile a few years back for Sir Michael Stout. Very strong Judmont pedigree, is no surprise. And I actually like Into Mischief on the turf. I think they can run on pretty much anything. So I'm most intrigued by the Bill Mott runners, and do expect some improve from the 1 Please the Pharaoh, who didn't run a step on that yielding turf up at Aqueduct. Blinkers on. John Kimmel, obviously strong 2nd time out, and his barn is really heating up here down in Florida.
Yeah, that one attracted a lot of money at the 2-year-old sale earlier this year. Adds blinkers, adds Lasix, as a lot of these new 3-year-olds will be doing over the next few weeks as the calendar is now turned. So that one, again, at the 21 morning line, which I think, given the career debut, is going to hold up. I think it gets some value. I agree. Please the Pharaoh is a little bit interesting in there for John Kimmel. All right, let's get back to stakes action. Race number 9 this afternoon, the Ginger Brew. We looked at the 3-year-old boys on the turf in the Dania Beach. These are the 3-year-old girls going a mile on the grass. Oyster Box, interesting for Graham Motion. Honey Pants off a decent little 2nd place finish in a stakes race last time for Christoph Clement. Pletcher has Con Lima. Interesting field in here. Your thoughts in the Ginger Brew?
Yeah, unfortunately, Oyster Box is a scratch. She was my top pick in there. I thought her debut was very good, but we'll have to wait to see her another day. Honey Pants stretching out. I thought her 2 races were very strong so far. She does have a lot of speed. But I would imagine she's going to sit just off of Conlima, who, with a scratch of Oysterbox, it did land on Conlima on top and would be using her and Honey Pants in this spot. Conlima, it's interesting. She was actually a main track only into P.G. Johnson up in Saratoga. She wasn't entered for the turf that day in her first start for Todd Fletcher, but she was in that R. Deer Peggy stake at the end of September. Finally, they got to try the grass last time, and she really just so easily wired the field and was much the best. So deeper waters today for sure, but I like her on the turf. She's a very tricky filly in that she's very difficult in the afternoons. They keep her away from the rest of the field and keep her with the pony. She goes out first in the post parade, but she uses that speed to her advantage out on the front end. So we'll see if she's able to have an easy time of it once again. As far as last out maiden winners, and I love these kinds of newly turned three-year-old races because you have a lot of these horses stepping up off the back of just one start and a first out maiden win. I thought the 5 Karakatsi ran really nicely. She has a lot of good substance to her. Queen of the Green, I liked in that spot, but she had that outside post. She did come back to win at Tampa. And Armando Taylor Cerda is sneaky, very good with two-year-olds, but now three-year-old young horses and bringing them on the turf. You think back to Tiermeister last year, who he really did very well with in the turf stakes at Gulfstream.
Very good. Let's turn the page to the Mucho Macho Man, race number 10. Again, kind of kicking off the Derby trail down in Florida, as it were, with three-year-olds going the one-turn mile. Mark Cassie has easy time off the maiden breaker in the debut up at Woodbine. Safi Joseph has a couple in here, the 4 and the 6, who I think are both players. Going to pull up a replay, though, of the Nashua going a couple starts back for Pick and Time. Pick and Time is going to be the number 4 horse on this replay, getting it done, as I say, in the Nashua, which was a one-turn mile up at Aqueduct. Subsequently ran 4th in the Remsen at 2 turns. Pick and Time might appreciate the return to the one-turn mile down at Gulfstream. Your thoughts on the Mucho Macho Man?
I agree. Top pick is Pick and Time, as he also gets back to a fast main track after that sloppy track in the Remsen. And I do think Brooklyn Strong, who won that race, is very good for Danny Velasquez. So I landed on Pick and Time. I think he's been facing good horses. I think the wild card is really Mutasa Beck, the 5 for Todd Fletcher, as he won first out at Saratoga in a really nice way, distant third behind Jackie's Warrior. And then they switched to the turf. So I wonder the thought process and now coming back to the dirt. I understand, hey, you've got a horse that can obviously run well on both surfaces. Maybe this is a stepping stone into some of the Triple Crown prep races that we have here at Gulfstream, the Holy Bull coming up the week after the Pegasus World Cup. But he's one that I'm curious. I think he's a lovely mover, a beautiful horse. He has been much more tactical on the dirt versus coming from pretty far off of it on the turf. I'm wondering if they're still kind of trying to figure him out as well.
Yeah, he was a total question mark for me. I'm not sure what to do with that one this afternoon, but it looks like a fun addition of the Mucho Macho Man, again, kicking off three-year-old action down in Florida. And you mentioned the Pegasus World Cup. I'm really looking forward to that. As the news has come out, as horses have won races and said, yeah, our next start, yeah, we're certainly thinking about the Pegasus. It seems like it is shaping up as a big event this year, as it has been for the past couple of years.
That's right. This is the 5th edition, which is crazy to see. Time flies when you're having fun,
yeah.
Right? So on January 23rd, we'll have the 5th edition of the Pegasus World Cup Dirt, the 3rd edition of the Pegasus World Cup Turf. And we were disappointed to lose Tizala, of course, as he will be retired, but wishing him all the best. But I think what it is that both of the races are going to be very strong betting races because they'll be pretty wide open. You've got the likes of Pax, who won the prep, coming into the Pegasus World Cup, some strong horses that are on the bubble potentially thinking to try. Todd Fletcher looks loaded in the turf with the likes of Largent, Social Paranoia, and perhaps Colonel Liam as well. So looking forward to all of those. And it's always a really strong undercard on the Pegasus World Cup day as well.
Yeah, we are clearly underway in the championship meet and have been for a few weeks now. Always fun to catch up. Acacia, appreciate the conversation. Say hello to Ron and Jason for me, and we will check in again as the meet progresses.
Sounds good, Seth. Thanks so much.
Appreciate it. Acacia Courtney, again, nice stakes action down at Gulfstream this afternoon. And again, a $1.1 million guarantee in the Rainbow Six. So keep that in mind as the day progresses. We will certainly be looking at that a little bit later on during OTB Live. Right now, we'll head to a break. When we come back, just going to have a little segment. I have my Eclipse ballot that I have to have filled out by Monday. So I thought we'd take a couple of minutes and just toss out some Eclipse thoughts. And some. I think there are some slam dunks in there. And so we'll touch on some of those and maybe a category or two that are a little more questionable. And so we'll take a couple of minutes for that. And then a little bit later on, Dave Grenig from the Daily Racing Forum. We'll talk some New York racing as well. Stay tuned.
Find your favorite teams, your favorite food, daily drink specials, and wagering on live horse racing? Legends Field Sports Bar, 711 Central Avenue, Albany. Get your game on day or night with 75 flat-screen TVs, tournament-style pool tables, a private banquet room, and live horse racing. So if someone asks you, where's the best sports bar in the Capital Region? Tell them, Legends Field Sports Bar, inside the Clubhouse Racebook, 711 Central Avenue, Albany.
What if there was a way to become a better horse player, to have a better knowledge of the game, to be more successful? What if there were a way to take what you've learned, what you know, and make better decisions, better choices? In horse racing, knowledge is a powerful tool. Race results and replays, past performances and live streaming, wagering from all your digital devices. Capital OTB, become a better horse player.
Welcome back to Racing Across America on this first Saturday of 2021. I'm Seth Merrill. Thanks for joining us. As I said before the break, I have my Eclipse ballot. This isn't the actual ballot. These are the PPs that you can check through online. They have updated PPs, and they have updated stats for the human side of things, because this actually came in the mail 3 weeks ago, maybe, so it hadn't gone through completely the end of the year. But due 3 o'clock on Monday afternoon, so I'll have to plow in during the weekend and really firm things up. But there are some categories that are, as I said earlier, kind of slam dunks. And so I went through some of the early categories. Maybe we'll hit on some more tomorrow. But two-year-old male comes up pretty early in the PPs, and certainly the two-year-old male category you would think is a slam dunk. Essential Quality, we're going to take a look at the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. Essential Quality will be the number five horse, getting it done here for trainer Brad Cox. Luis Saez on board this day to run the record 2-3-3. That included the maiden special weight event early in September at Churchill, then over to Keeneland for the Breeders' Futurity, a win there, and then a win here, as we see in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. You're 3-3, a couple of grade ones. I it's just hard to make a case, really, for anybody else, because the Breeders' Cup is supposed to be the championship event. It doesn't always work out that way, just because there are horses with some stronger resumes. Maybe an upset leaves things open for horses that didn't run in or were a little further behind in the Breeders' Cup. But in this situation, you have the legitimate kind of a horse who went off as the second choice in the betting behind Jackie's Warrior, and Jackie's Warrior wound up fourth in here. So you have a showdown between a couple of the logical contenders, and one winds up winning and one winds up fourth, winning to stay undefeated. Now, Jackie's Warrior had won the Hopeful, had won the Champagne, four wins in five career starts. So I suppose you could make the case there, but given the head-to-head matchup, running fourth behind Essential Quality, as they say, I think Essential Quality is pretty much a slam dunk in that two-year-old male category. Turn a couple pages further along. Another slam dunk you would have to think is going to be in the three-year-old category. It pains me to say, because being a local guy, love rooting for Tis the Law. And as Keisha mentioned earlier, if you didn't see the news this week, Tis the Law was retired, a little bit of a bone bruise, and so rather than take any chances, they retired Tis the Law. But Sacatoga and local connections and whatnot, he was fun to root for all year long. It's just, we're going to take a look here at the Breeders' Cup Classic, and number 9, Authentic, is going to win. Tis the Law, the number 2, will run 6th in here as the 3-1 favorite. But Authentic, putting this one on the resume, along with the Kentucky Derby and the Haskell, 3 grade 1s, Derby and Breeders' Cup Classic. And again, the head-to-head matchup here with Tis the Law. And there was a head-to-head matchup between the two in the Derby as well. So I think Authentic is in the slam dunk kind of a category as far as 3-year-old males as well. You know, it's, as I say, pains me because Tis the Law just... and if you saw, we did a little top 10 races of the year, put it on social media and put that together a few days ago. And my top race of the year was the Traverse. I thought Tis the Law was spectacular in their 109 buyer figure. And it was just a wow performance. So just subsequently the second place finish in the Kentucky Derby and the sixth place finish in the Breeders' Cup Classic. It's disappointing. I was happy to root for him all year long. We were with the Saratoga folks up at Pinnell's in Saratoga for the watch party for the win in the Belmont Stakes. That was a lot of fun. And then that win in the Traverse. But again, with the Derby and the Breeders' Cup Classic, a couple of wins over Tis the Law. Seems like Authentic, the direction you have to go in the three-year-old category. Three-year-old fillies. This one, I suppose, could be a little more wide open. There are some horses in here that maybe you can make the case for Paris Lights with 3 wins in the coaching club, American Oaks, but only 4 starts on the year. I'm guessing Gamine is maybe the challenger here. So in the 3-year-old filly category, first let's take a look at the Preakness. I think it probably goes to Swiss Skydiver, this category. Swiss Skydiver is going to be the number 4 Ding Dong Battle to win a neck over Authentic. And again, you're talking about this filly beating the horse that will be the 3-year-old male Eclipse winner. So I think this probably puts Swiss Skydiver in the driver's seat for the 3-year-old filly Eclipse Award. Her win in the Alabama was very impressive. Subsequently, 2nd in the Kentucky Oaks, the win in the Preakness. She wound up a disappointing 7th in the Breeders' Cup Distaff. But I think that win in the Preakness over the boys and over Authentic, again, probably puts her in the driver's seat for 3-year-old filly. But going to also take a look at the Breeders' Cup Filly and Mayor Sprint, and we're going to watch the number 2, Gamine, get it done. I mean, she was just phenomenal this year. The win in the Acorn with a 110 buyer figure, the win in the Test with a 108 buyer figure, and this win over Serengeti Empress, a very talented older filly and mare sprinter with a 110 buyer here, Breeders' Cup filly and mare sprint. I think she winds up getting another Eclipse, though, which I think maybe will let people go with more confidence towards Swiss Skydiver, because I think you can make the case for Gamine. And it wouldn't shock me if it's close. It wouldn't shock me if Gamine won, because she's had a phenomenal year. 4 wins in 6 starts, and again, the wins were just eye-popping. So this category is kind of fun, but as I say, I think that the Preakness win is going to tilt it towards Swiss Skydiver in here. We will see. We will know sooner rather than later, because again, ballots are due on Monday afternoon. And as I say, on tomorrow's Racing Across America, maybe we'll hit on some of the other categories in here. Older male, I think, is going to be an interesting category this year, because I don't know whether anyone was particularly dominant, and the Breeders' Cup Classic was won by the 3-year-old this year. So you have horses on the PPs that were sent out, horses like By My Standards, who earlier this year won the Ali Sheba, 2nd in the Whitney, 2nd in the Stephen Foster, was 2nd behind Tom's Detat, who was also here on the PPs. True Timber coming out of the win in the Cigar. Vekoma, 3 for 3, including the Met Mile win, the very nice Met Mile win. Maximum Security with the win in the Saudi Cup while still in the barn at Jason Service. How will that play with voters? But subsequently moved into the Bob Baffert barn, won the San Diego and the Pacific Classic, wound up 5th in the Breeders' Cup Classic. So again, that older dirt male category is going to be interesting to see how that plays out. Older dirt females, I think that one may be one of the slam dunk categories that we'll hit on tomorrow. That one's going to go to Monomoy Girl, certainly with the 4-for-4 record off the long layup. She was just a great storyline as well. So as I say, we'll maybe hit on some more of these Eclipse categories on tomorrow's program, but I gave you three of the categories, the two of which I think are slam dunks, with authentic three-year-old male, essential quality, the two-year-old male, and then the three-year-old filly. I think Swiss Skydiver probably has the edge there, but Gamine is going to make that one kind of interesting. All right, we'll take a break. Oh, when we come back, Dave Grenick from the Daily Racing Forum will join us. Again, we'll recap yesterday's Jerome, which kicked off the three-year-old season in New York. We'll have some more New York conversation as well with Dave Grenning right after this. Stay tuned. Racing Across America will continue.
No matter where in the world you are, the excitement of wagering on horse racing is just a click away. You'll get live streaming, past performances, race replays, our virtual tote board, analysis and selections from professional handicappers, a simple, safe, and secure wagering platform. And best of all, you get track prices. CapitalOTBBet.com. Bet any place, anytime at CapitalOTBBet.com. And be sure to download our new mobile app from the iTunes Store or Google Play.
Having trouble finding us? It's actually quite simple. Whether online or on your TV, it's never been easier to watch and wager on championship horse racing with Capital OTB. Simply log on to CapitalOTBBet.com. There you can watch our morning shows, live stream races, and wager on our state-of-the-art wagering platform. You can also watch from the comfort of your home on Spectrum Cable Channel 1250 or Fios Channel 467. And win more with Capital OTB.
In a recent study of some of the top online wagering sites, Capital OTB won big in total player rewards, far surpassing some of the best-known wagering sites in America. While other rewards programs simply offer you points redeemable for gift cards, Capital OTB's rebates are paid to you in actual cash. Plus, Capital OTB gives you full and immediate access to your money. So if all you're getting now are points and gift cards, join Capital OTB Player Rewards today and get cash back. Visit CapitalOTBBet.com and sign up today.
Welcome back to Racing Across America again on this first Saturday of 2021. Happy New Year to everybody, and Happy New Year as well to my guest, Dave Grenick, as promised before the break, some New York conversation with the New York correspondent from the Daily Racing Forum. Dave, good morning.
Good morning, and Happy New Year to you and all your viewers up there.
Yeah, appreciate it to have some New York conversation, and we'll start by going back to yesterday and recapping the Jerome, kicking off the three-year-old season. Again, the calendar turns on January 1st and all the two-year-olds become three-year-olds, and the Jerome kicked off the season in New York. A mile for $150,000 purse. And Dave Parks is turning out to be a real breeding ground. Brooklyn Strong a few weeks ago, who was a lot of fun to watch. And yesterday it was Capo Kane coming in from Parks as the second longest price in the field of five, looking pretty good on the front end under Dylan Davis, be the number one horse here as we watch the stretch run. And they got up to him at the top of the stretch, and it looked like Eagle Orb, who I thought was live, might go on by, but then Capo Kane puts it in another gear and just pulls away. The chart margin winds up being over five lengths, so this was a pretty good performance, again, by a Parks Invader.
Yeah, I mean, look, I wouldn't be, you know, making reservations for Louisville just yet, but it was a nice step up from a maiden win at Parks to come into a stakes, which was kind of light in terms of quality. I thought front runners had an advantage yesterday. I don't want to go out and say it was a big bias, but, you know, you wanted to be close to the pace yesterday, and I thought Swill was actually the fastest of the group, but he turned out not to be. Capo Kane got a nice, you know, got put into the race nicely by Dylan Davis, and, you know, took some token pressure from Swill, who did not go on. Eagle Orb, you know, I have a feeling Eagle Orb is probably a sprinter, three quarters, seven eighths type of horse. And you know, Capo Kane, it's a little disconcerting, drifting out a little bit like he did, but he's Harold Weiner, the trainer, said that he kind of did that in his maiden win as well, that he'd like to put a blinker on him. but it's hard to put blinkers, make an equipment change when the horse is winning. So, you know, maybe that's a good sense that there's a room for improvement going forward. You know, just is a nice victory, but you know, as far as the Derby goes, I don't know that I get too excited.
Yeah, I mean, it was a field of five, and I don't know whether there are any potential superstars in there. But again, it was a nice performance from Cap O'Kane coming in from Parks. I mentioned Brooklyn Strong again, another Mid-Atlantic based horse. And after that horse won, and Cap O'Kane paid $26,000 for that one. Brooklyn Strong, certainly an inexpensive purchase, and a New York bred as well, as I say, based in the Mid-Atlantic. And after that one won, they were kind of debating or hadn't made any firm plans of what would be next for a Brooklyn Strong. But it looks like they're going to stick on the New York trail with that one, correct?
Yeah, talked to Daniel Velasquez, who picked him out for $5,000. So it's nice to see some of these, lesser expensive horses doing well. Daniel Velasquez, who was actually based at Delaware through the summer and fall, and then with Delaware closing, he just recently moved the horse over to Park. So maybe we'll just run the Withers at Parks on February 6th. But that's where he's planning to run the horse. Makes perfect sense. I mean, there's no real reason to. He just won a mile and an eighth race at Aqueduct, so why go anywhere else for the immediate future? There, you have another nice mile and an eighth race that probably won't be too difficult on February 6th. You might as well run there. And then, look, I would even go as far as saying you might, if you do well there and the weather's not too bad and you can train the way you want to at Parks, sit around and wait for the Wood on another mile and eighth race with a bigger pot and even more Derby points on in April 3rd. But they could go to Florida after the Withers. I guess a lot will depend on, A, how he does in the Withers, and, B, if they're able to withstand offers for the horse. I know they've gotten several, but right now he's staying with owner Mark Schwartz and Dan Velasquez, and they're going to have a lot of going to have a lot of fun with him. They also got that nice New York bred filly, Leo Bannon A Prayer, who's going to come up here, I think, for the Franklin Square. She's won two in a row here in New York.
I like the way you put that, withstand offers, because I guess everybody has a point where you can no longer withstand it.
True. You know, the beauty thing here is you don't have to, if you're those guys, you don't have to sell. You're not looking to recoup a major investment.
Yeah.
You only spent five, you're already out on this horse. I'm sure one of the stipulations for any purchase, you know, unless you get really bowled over, would be that the horse stays with Velasquez, who I'm sure a lot of people don't really know. You know, some of the bigger names that, you know, you figure might want to get a prospect. You know, they would have to acquiesce to leaving the horse at Parks with Velasquez. And I'm sure there's some guys who aren't willing to do that. Now, maybe there are some who would pay a little bit more to do that. But right now, I think they're just enjoying themselves. They're like I said, they're out on the horse already financially, and who knows how far the horse can take them.
Yeah, I think he's a lot of fun. And again, we'll see if 2 years in a row a New York bred can be prominent on the three-year-old scene. It's still early for Brooklyn Strong, but kind of a fun story. All right, let's get a little little preview on the Gravesend, which is this afternoon's feature. Only a field of five in here, but I said on the handicapping show earlier, boy, I could make a case for four of them, and I could have juggled them up almost in any direction. I'm not totally convinced on Drafted, but it could go in other directions. You wrote a little bit about Happy Farm coming into the race, and so I pulled up the Fall Highway from last year. Happy Farm will be the number seven here getting it done, but notably, at this point, was in the barn adjacent service. Followed up back in March, still in the service barn, running second in the Tom Fool, has been on the sidelines since. And these service horses, as they move to other barns, it's been kind of a mixed bag. So this one has that going, also has the layoff going. I tilted towards my boy Tate in the race. But as I say, anything other than Drafted, I could have juggled up and put on top. This is a small field, but I think it's a fun field. How did you see the Gravesend?
I saw it similar to you with my boy Tate. I thought it was the headliners were my boy Tate and Stan the Man. What I like about my boy Tate is his record at Aqueduct and especially his record over a wet track. He's actually 4-for-4 on a wet track, which I believe we will have today. I'm actually just pulling in Aqueduct now, but it's very warm. It's over 50. right now. We had moisture yesterday. We had rain. I mean, the track at Belmont, the training track was really wet this morning. I'm going to assume the same thing in play here. And I think he'll stalk Happy Farm, who, you know, Linda Rice is now the trainer of Happy Farm. She got the horse after the whole service thing went down last March. She trained the horse for a little while. The horse really wasn't doing that great. She sent him out for a break, brought him back. She mentioned that the horse is kind of a heavy type of horse, so you're trying the training to get the weight off. I don't know that she's thoroughly happy with, you know, where he's at from a fitness standpoint, though, but it is probably time to race. I see My Boy Tate sitting right off of Happy Farm, taking over from him, and then having to hold off a Stand the Manor, or maybe even a drafted, you know, just who. The interesting thing with drafted is, as we get into 2021 and no Lasix and stakes races in New York, drafted has had success without racing on Lasix in Dubai, so maybe that's a feather in his cap. Plus, you had a feel that he was probably in need of a race when he ran in the Fall Highway off a long layoff. So I could see some improvement from that horse today. I'm just not sure how good he is, but it's not out of the realm of possibility to think that he could pull an upset, you know, if he does take a step forward. And again, the Lasix factor there too.
That's interesting. I'm glad you brought that up, because that may be something to watch going forward. Horses like this who have had some no Lasix experience as we do move forward, that'll be interesting to kind of watch and see how that plays out. And speaking about things playing out, you had a very nice article. I'll tell people to go look it up on drf.com, an interview, kind of a year-end interview with Dave O'Rourke, the head man at NYRA, talking a little bit about the future of NYRA and some things that may be around the corner or maybe a little further down the road. Before we get into some of the specifics there, though, I will also talk, because on the handicapping show earlier, Brian Addo and I were talking, and we were handicapping NYRA and got to the Empire Six race and reminded folks it's a little bit different this year. With now the payout being every day on the Empire Six, what was their thought process behind that?
I think they just want to see how doing something a little different with the Empire Six, you know, the whole concept is to create this jackpot wager, and I don't necessarily think that it resulted in, you know, when you build it up and you get to that mandatory payout day, I don't really know that it resulted in that sort of jackpot wager that they thought, and it, you also allow, I think what happens is too, is the computer players don't necessarily get involved, or we're not getting involved that much on the day-to-day, but they would get really involved on the mandatory payout days, and it was seemed kind of unfair when you got that, you know, the smaller player who's basically funded this carryover, and then they get swallowed up by the computer players on the day when it's a mandatory payout day. So I think that had a little bit of a role in it. I think they're interested to see what the handle will be on this, you know, daily mandatory payout. Yesterday was pretty good. I think it was 147,000. But that was a holiday card. We'll have to see, like, when you get to, like, next Thursday and start to see how this plays out. And I guess in the back of their mind, they might be thinking about, well, let's see how this works out. And, that, you know, would they be interested in going back to the traditional $2 pick six, which is possible. I guess my one thing would be, well, do you really learn that much in the wintertime about it? I might have tried that experiment maybe during that Aqueduct spring meet. I don't know when people are less focused on the Gulfstream Rainbow Six, where they seem to be more focused, you know, this time of year.
Yeah, it is funny how different venues these bets, because at Gulfstream it's like a home run, but at other venues it hasn't been quite as popular. I kind of would have thought if they were aiming for, as you say, to play more to the small better that bets into it, why not make the mandatory every 2 weeks maybe, or maybe every week or every day? I'm not sure how it's going to play out exactly, but it'll be interesting to watch 2 or 3 weeks down the road to start comparing numbers to last year. But let's get into some of the meat of what you talked to Dave O'Rourke about, because I think the big takeaway from your article was Belmont and basically a pretty big change that potentially is coming from Belmont with a redo of the facility. And O'Rourke was saying potentially to wind up a third of the size and racing to wind up there pretty much all year long, except for Saratoga, of course.
Yeah, I think it's sort of this is what they've sort of been talking about for a while now, even when they went to the you know, the open board meetings, you know, when Cuomo took over the board a few years ago, and Chris Kay was in charge, and you know, they were always talking about doing some renovations to Belmont to the point where they would probably want to transition to a year-round racing at Aqueduct, again, save the summer meet at Saratoga. But, I, you know, a lot of that stuff has been put on hold. Everything was put on hold last year with the COVID situation, and plans to go forward were never really presented. But they were close to presenting plans, and I think now they want to start up those talks again with the state as we get into 2021. And it seems like whereas it was either put a Band-Aid on, do slight renovations or refurbishings to the building, or versus a total rebuild, I kind of have the feeling now that they're leaning towards a total rebuild and make the building a bit smaller, more conducive to, you know, year-round racing. It's a very cold building. It's never, you know, it's not great venue in the you know, right when we get started in April, it's cold, and the fall meet, it can get, you know, kind of nasty there too, and just make it a little bit more, you know, modern, you know, for the modern day crowd now.
Yeah.
You know, we don't get large crowds anymore. They still hope that their hope is still, look, they're not looking to do what Gulfstream did and sort of eliminate all seating so that you could never have a Breeders' Cup there. They do want to have a Breeders' Cup back at Belmont at some point. I just think they want to make it a little bit more modern. They want to utilize the infield space. I know that's been talked about a lot. And I also think that sort of goes hand in hand with when they get to do their resurfacing. They want to redo these surfaces as well. The plan is to keep the main track at a mile and a half and the way it is now. I'm not sure what they want to do, if they want to sort of change the turf courses a little bit. You know, some of these races, they start on an angle, and, you know, that's not always the greatest either. But they do want to utilize the infield. I think they even have had some conversations with the state, maybe, and even the Islanders and those people about, you know, possible things that they could do with the infield when they're not there for racing, say in the summer, you could have some summer festivals or something like that. So I think there's a lot of stuff that they have in their drawers and in their minds that they want to do. Now they just got to get them, they got to rejuvenate those talks with the state, and I think that's what they'd like to do, you know, as we get this COVID thing under control, which might take a few more months.
One thing, when I read the article and heard about the infield, I was curious about, and they may not have delved this deeply into it, but would they build a tunnel?
Yes, yes. No, that's exactly what they would do, and that's sort of what plays into the, you know, how they, when they get to redo these surfaces, you know, they got to put a tunnel underneath something. So, yes, they do want to make a tunnel for access to the infield.
Yeah, very interesting. And it also was noted in your article, as we got to the year end, you could look back on the entire year, but certainly as the year went along, this was becoming obvious. The numbers were pretty good, despite the COVID situation. Now, they were good on a day-to-day basis. The entire year numbers were affected by the number of missing days from the racing calendar, certainly. But overall, given, you know, what we were looking at in March and April, and it's not just New York, it was a lot of venues around the country, the numbers turned out to be pretty good this year.
They were. I think the average daily handle was up 17%. I think that was key. And I think also that what was important is when, you know, racing was really sort of the first, at least in New York, the first sport to get going again after things were shut down. And when the other sports did get going in the summer and you had everything going on at once, the gambling was still strong on horse racing, which was a good sign that people didn't just tune into racing and then, okay, now basketball's back and hockey's back and baseball's starting. The dollars just transitioned over there. I think they kept a number of core players, which was good. And hopefully as we move into 2021, and I believe sports wagering will become more available in the state. I think the state has to do some of these things to, you know, help close the budget hole created by the COVID situation. And if you get mobile sports wagering, hopefully racing can still, you know, be part of that mix. And, you know, and it seems like at least it's got a good start to have an attractive product. I think that NYRA's ability to show their races on TV, which is basically what they did really from June to the end of November, was key for them. It's a quality show. You get good information. You get to see all the races, pre and post race analysis. So that, I think that was a big help for their wagering too.
And it was also noted that the four-day race week may become kind of a staple in New York, outside of Saratoga, obviously.
Yeah, I have a feeling they seem to have been headed in that direction for a while. It seemed like the only five-day weeks were at Belmont spring and fall. I think maybe looking at last year's calendar, I guess the Aqueduct would have had 2 5-day weeks had we run in April. So I think they like the 4-day week. It keeps the fields fuller. You know, they're still, you know, you're still dealing with a bit of a horse shortage, and you're competing with a lot of markets in the area. So I think the 4-day week helps them stretch the horse population out a little bit. And you can add races. I guess they feel it's better to add races on those days than it is to just have another day of the week. So if you're feeling well and you got the daylight in the spring, and obviously the summer, you can add, you know, maybe have a 10-race card, or if it warrants an 11-race card. And but I think you'll see 4-day weeks, except in March, which will probably be 3 in the wintertime. And as you said, at Saratoga, we'll stay with the 5-day week, Wednesday through Sunday format.
And you mentioned the hockey rink, and I pulled up a couple of photos of the current situation there, you know, the construction, how far along we are. But you may know better than I do. Again, looking at the pictures, it looks like it's pretty far along. But technically speaking, how far along is it? And when is it scheduled to open up, the hockey rink?
I think they're pretty much right on schedule, if not slightly ahead of schedule. You know, last year we had a pretty mild winter. It didn't really disrupt their construction, especially on the outer shell of the building. They've almost got that done. They got the good portion of the roof up, or most of the roof on, so they can transition to working inside. The way I understood it is they were basically 2 months ahead of schedule when the COVID situation shut them down in the spring. They were shut down for 2 months. They opened up, they started rebuilding again in June. And so for the last 6-7 months, they've been, 6 days a week, because I just drove past there coming over here again, and they're working on Saturdays. So I think they're pretty much close to being on schedule. I'm thinking it's in October, November is when they want to open it. The hockey season typically starts in early October. And I think that's when the arena could be ready, maybe not before then. You know, I'm not sure the hockey game will be the first event there. I could see a Billy Joel concert or something like that being, ushering in the new arena in Long Island.
And as I was looking up those pictures yesterday, I saw that they put a live cam in. If people want to check out the construction down there, they can do that as well. Dave, before we let you go, I just wanted to touch on one more thing, because this is something of a head scratcher. And you in the article that you had on it that came out yesterday quoted the actual rule and had commentary from Braulio Baeza, the steward. But the Trevor McCarthy, Katie Davis situation, being that they're married, if you are now looking in the PPs and you see horses coupled, that you're scratching your head wondering, why are these horses coupled? Different owners, different trainers. But because Trevor McCarthy and Katie Davis are married, their horses have to be coupled, which we were talking in the studio yesterday, and you kind of addressed it in the article. We were saying, well, what about the Ortiz brothers? Or what about a boyfriend and girlfriend? We've never seen this happen before. But because they're spouses and the way the rule is written, their horses are going to have to be coupled this winter.
Yeah, I think that sort of the basis for the rule is that it's really based on financial situation, and that a husband and wife's finances really are tied into each other a lot more than, say, a brother's situation. I mean, I look at my situation. My brother, he's got his job. He makes his money. I have my job. I support my family. He supports his family. The husband and wife are supporting their family together. Yeah. So I guess that's sort of the genesis of the rule. I know people went up in arms about, well, what about the Ortiz brothers? It's like, well, they each have their own families. They have their own thing. They have their own houses. They have their own this and their own that. My thinking is it's a bit of an antiquated rule, and that if the stewards can do their job properly, if they think there's some sort of shenanigans going on in a race where a husband and a wife are riding, then you know what? Make that individual situation, make a disqualification, heavy suspension, and if it happens again, then you're out of here. You know, it's funny. they came from Maryland. They were riding in Maryland where the, when they were engaged. That rule, there's no such rule in Maryland. When they go, if and when they go back to Maryland, say to ride at Laurel, Pimlico after this winter meet, I don't think that situation is going to arise there. And it just shows you yet another example of how, you know, the ununiformity, if you will, of racing jurisdictions. And maybe this new horse racing integrity situation, maybe they'll come in and address all the rules and make them uniform. It might take 5, 10, 30 years. I don't know. But that's sort of, you know, it seems silly that in Maryland it's one rule way and in New York it's another way.
Yeah, I'm with you. Just what you said. As I first heard this, I thought, but then when I read the article and saw it has to do with joint finances, I kind of got it, and I got the difference between the brothers. But yeah, I still think it's probably an antiquated rule that maybe it deserves a review of, along with the rule that came to light a couple of months ago as well, with the jockey agent rule, where you have to be either have been a jockey or a trainer or an assistant trainer, and you look around the country and see any number of agents that haven't. Why? Because they have different rules in different jurisdictions. So maybe it's time for the rule book to get a little review in New York.
I totally agree. That was a silly rule too. It's only hurting, you know, the jockey, you know, that the young man who was referenced in that TDN article. I'm sure he knows a lot more than somebody who might have been a son of or was once related to a great uncle who trained horses at one point. I don't think knowing how to wrap a bandage on a horse's ankle makes you a smarter jockey agent than, say, someone who hasn't.
Yeah, again, maybe it's time to just a little review and recap of the and renew of the rules may be worth a while every once in a while. Dave, appreciate it. And again, I'll tell people to pick up that DRF article. The interview you did with Dave O'Rourke came out just a few days ago. And again, he goes over in more detail some of the potential changes coming up for NYRA, and also a little recap of the year that was had. Dave, appreciate the conversation this morning. We'll talk again.
Anytime, sir. Thank you.
Dave Grenig from the Daily Racing Forum, New York correspondent. Again, nice article, a nice recap of the year, and a look forward as well with Dave O'Rourke, again, coming out just a few days ago. You can catch that at DRF.com. All right, also thanks earlier to Acacia Courtney, taking a look at some of the stakes action at Gulfstream this afternoon. We'll look at that and much more on OTB Live. And, a little over an hour or so, we'll probably jump on with that. And then coming up at about 3 o'clock, we will kick into bankroll mode. We'll have a bankroll between 3 and 7 right here on the network this afternoon. Hope to do better than the last. I said, boy, I have whiffed the past, three bankrolls, and I got to get back in gear. So I'm glad to be able to get back on the horse this afternoon. Go to the website. I think there's still a little bit of time. I think probably it'll cut off about lunchtime, the bankroll team. So go to the website, capitalotb.com. Click on the promotions link, and then you can find a link to the bankroll to put your name in the hat. 20 folks will be randomly selected to play this afternoon on the bankroll team. And as I say, we'll kick off here on the network at about 3, go to about 7 o'clock or so. Also, keep in mind, tomorrow here at the Clubhouse Racebook, Football Sunday. We'd love to have you come on down and watch some of the football action and some of the racing action as well, as we are winding down the NFL season. Come in and root for your team, root for the Jets to potentially beat the Patriots. It's a completely meaningless game, but as a Jets fan, after 2 wins and it's the Patriots, I'm rooting for them to win, because the whole Trevor Lawrence, that's out the window. That went out with the first win. So I'm rooting for him to beat the dreaded Patriots. So we'll see if that can work out for the Jets this weekend. And again, you can come down and watch all the racing action and all the football action every Sunday during the season, 7-Eleven Central Avenue in Albany. All right, Racing Across America in the books for this Saturday morning. We'll be back tomorrow morning at about 10 o'clock with more Racing Across America, recapping some of today's nice stakes action and much, much more. So hope to see you then. At 10 a.m. tomorrow. But in the meantime, we'll be back, as I said, about an hour or so with OTB Live for a Saturday afternoon. So thanks for tuning in this morning. We'll see you in a while.
You're watching OTB TV, a service of Capital Off-Track Betting.